other houses I won't buy, houses without a driveway, I don't want, because here, you know, in the middle of winter when the roads have to be plowed, mm-hmm. most folks with a decent car do not want to leave it on the street. So I try to steer away from those. I steer away from houses with tiny bedrooms. What I've found is if the house has a master bedroom of 12 by 11 or smaller, it's a tough sell. It takes months and months and months.
And why don't you explain to everybody why that is?
Well, most young folks today have those great big king-size beds with
That's
a lacquer
right.
furniture.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they know that. And, you know, their gripe is, well, my bedroom suit won't fit in there. And they don't want to have half of it in one bedroom and half in another. So at that point in the game, they just pass. I mean, you always have to look at what other houses are for sale in the price range. And if your bedrooms are 10 by 10 for the master and everybody else's is a 12 by 14, they're going to buy the house with the big one. So actually, bedroom size is one thing a lot of investors don't look at, and I do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other kinds of houses I won't buy is anything that has a 7.5-foot ceiling. You'll run into some of them old ones once in a while. A house that's functionally obsolete with a really bad layout. For example, I looked at one today.
Hold on a second. You said a house that has a 7.5-foot ceiling?
Mm-hmm. Low ceilings?
Lower ceilings.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, typically
typical
ours here are 8-foot.
Oh, okay.
You know, if it's a 7-foot ceiling,
yeah.
You know, you feel like a midget. You know, it's got to be a midget that's got to buy it. So I stay away from them.
Yeah. Well, you wake up every morning feeling like Chicken Little, right?
Right.
The sky is falling.
And they're
sky
out
is
there.
Falling.
I mean, that, a lot of times that's the ones that are foreclosed because there was something wrong with it. You know, the person who owned it couldn't get rid of it, so they ended up leaving it go to foreclosure.
Yeah.
Functionally obsolete is another type of house I won't buy. I looked at one this morning, for example, for this weekend's bus tour. It's got two bedrooms upstairs, but one of them is so teeny tiny, and it's like an L shape.
Yeah.
So it's weird. And then to top it all off, the only bathroom is off the kitchen. So if you have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you got to come down the stairs, you got to go through the living room, through the dining room, through the kitchen to go to the bathroom. So I know if a person's looking at that to buy it to live in it,
mm-hmm.
and their choice is a house that is not functionally obsolete, and I have one that is functionally obsolete, they're going to buy the other one. I'm not real fond of houses on busy streets. They tend to take a lot longer to sell.
Yeah.
People with children and people with dogs don't want those, you know, because they're worried. So that's pretty much it. But those are the ones I stay away from.
Okay, let me ask you this. You said that you originally started your relationships with your realtors because you were a realtor. If
mm-hmm.
somebody was just starting out, how would you suggest that they start their relationships with their realtors?
Well, the first thing they do, they got to find the REO realtor to begin with. And
yeah.
what I tell people...
When you say REO, what do you mean?
Real estate owned. REO realtors are a type of real estate agent that handle bank foreclosed properties. That's
mm-hmm.
their only source of income is selling properties that they list for the banks who've repoed them.
Okay.
So those folks get all the good deals to put up for sale. So what you do is if you're brand new and you do not have access to the multiple listing service because you're not a realtor, what I tell students to do is get your real estate section in the newspaper. Typically
mm-hmm.
there's one day a week that advertises most of the houses. For us, it's Sunday.
Yeah.
So what I tell students to do is get that. Read that section cover to cover. Looking for the ads where a realtor advertises, you know, that a home is going to be sold in as-is condition, or the home needs tender loving care, or proof of funds, or cash only. Anytime they put any words in there indicating the seller is motivated and it's a bank, a lot of them will even advertise bank-owned
mm-hmm.
in the ad. If there's any indication from a realtor that property is bank-owned, that realtor is an REO specialist. So you know that's one of the ones that gets a bunch of property to sell. So you've got to call and have a good conversation with them to get them to start to tell you what's coming in the inventory. So what I would do is call them up, and let's say the guy's name is Mark. I would call him up and say, hey, Mark, my name is Robin. I'm an investor. I've got $500,000 available. You know, you want to let them know you have cash available. If you don't, what you have to do is get it lined up from an investor you're going to wholesale to or an investor you're going to partner with. So, again, you don't literally need to have the money, but you need to have other investors who are experienced who are going to take the deal over from you. And once you do, then you can say that with conviction. I have money. I have liquidity available. And then I always let them know I need to buy two houses this month. And the reason I always ask for two deals when I call a realtor to establish a relationship, they know you're a player. They
mm.
know you're going to do a lot of business.
Mm.
That's important to them. You know, if you call and say, hey, I'm brand new. I've never bought a house before. I'm just getting into real estate investing. Could you help me find my first one? They'll hang up. because they only want to deal with the major investors that they know can close.
Right.
And then I always tell them I need to buy two deals this month for tax reasons. Anytime I say tax reasons, they think I'm reinvesting the capital for a 1031.
Yep.
Or I'm reinvesting it from a capital gain. Either way, if that $500,000 liquidity that I told them I have is coming from either one of those sources, that means I'm probably liquidating $3 to $4 million worth of real estate. So therefore, I am a major player. I'm not a brand newbie on the street.
Yeah, you know, when I first started out, I used to tell people that, yeah, I need to buy the realtors, that I need to buy properties quickly for tax reasons. And I just leave it at that, and they would assume that it was 1031 exchanges,
mm-hmm.
which I wasn't doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I justified it by thinking to myself, yeah, for tax reasons, because I want to show more income on my taxes. that's the way I justified making that statement.
And that works for me.
Yeah.
You can't make the money unless you make the offers.
That's right.
You know, the other thing then, the second sentence that I use to start that relationship going with the realtors, I say, hey, I'm a realtor just like you.
Yep.
That instantly builds rapport. You know, oh, they're one of us. She understands the laws for earnest money. Great. She knows how to fill out agreements. You know, that gets you a lot of leverage. And you're a realtor. I'm a realtor. We both know that's important.
Yep. I own a brokerage company.
Yep. Me too. And then the next thing I tell them, look, I'm a realtor like you, but I'm going to come in as a principal. What that means is we're not taking commission. I'm going to give the realtor who brings me the deal the listing side and the selling side, which means they get two paychecks out of my deal. I'll make the money, Dave, on the sell of the house and on
right.
the renovations. I don't need to nickel and dime every cent of commission out of a transaction.
Right.
You know, I want that realtor to call me again so that they know they're getting double paychecks every single time.
That's just it. I mean, before putting that money up front, you get more deals in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually make more money. And I think that's the smartest play you can make.
Yep. Now, the other thing I would say to Mark, hey, Mark, all you need to do is pick up the phone, call me and tell me that you have a house I need to look at. Since I am a realtor, I can go let myself in. I'll open up the lockbox. You're allowed to give me the code. I'll go ahead. I'll evaluate the property in about 15 minutes, and then I'll call you from the house and let you know if I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
If I want the property, I'm going to come back and do all your paperwork. See, Mark's paperwork and my paperwork is identical. It's got the little R letter on the top for realtor.
Right.
So I can fill out all the forms for him, and then I fax them all back. Then I tell him, Mark, all I need to do is pick up the phone and tell the bank what I'm willing to pay and get them to accept. And if they take the offer because we're close from what they want and what I'm willing to pay, the realtor's job is done. He's made one phone call to tell me about it, one phone call to get it accepted. And, Dave, I handle the transaction the rest of the way through. Once he gets me an accepted contract, I'm going to order my own title. I'm going to do my final walkthrough the day I buy it. He doesn't have to go let me in. I'm going to go to the closing. It takes 4 minutes to buy a house for cash. There's no reason for him to drive the whole way across town just to meet me for 4 minutes to buy a house.
Right.
I go ahead and do the final walkthrough. I go to the closing. I get that. I pull his lockbox off. And on the day of closing, I hand deliver him back the double commission check, his lockbox, so that he didn't have to even show up. So basically, to do a deal with me, it takes him just 5 minutes.
Beautiful.
It's not a lot of work. I always give him a good size earnest money deposit, more
mm-hmm.
so than most of the other investors.
You mean you don't give him $10 and $100 for the purchase and sale agreement?
Hey, Dave, you want to hear a funny one?
Yeah.
I had a deal a couple months ago where it got loaded into the MLS for $59,900. Great,
yeah.
Killer deal. Everybody was fighting over it. So I submitted an offer for $61,200.
Yeah.
More
yeah.
than full price right off the get-go.
Yeah.
I get a phone call from the realtor who I'd never dealt with before, and she sent me up multiple offers, best and final. And I'm like, oh, I hate that. And she said, I said, so what's it going to take? And I said, well, I got a question. Out of the six offers, what number high am I? And she said, you're the second highest. There's one higher than you. And I said to her, is the other one cash? Because mine was. And she said, nope, it isn't. And so I thought, I said, well, I'm not going to come up in price. And she said, you'll never get it. I said, well, raise the earnest money from $2,000 to $61,200. And she said, you're kidding. I said, no, I'm not. I want the house. She submitted it to the bank. And you know what it made them counter back to everybody else? A $61,200 earnest money.
Yeah.
And, of course, nobody else could come up with it immediately.
Huh.
So I bought the deal.
Great.
Just rough numbers on that one. I paid $61,200, put about $30,000 in it, and sold it for $140,000. Total transaction time took me 92 days.
Oh, that works.
Oh, yeah. The highest offer I found out after was $69,900, but they had to get a mortgage. So the
right.
bank took me.
So they had all your money in the bank
and
waiting to...
And, I mean, the house wasn't beat up that bad. There wasn't anything that made me nervous. It wasn't like a buried oil tank or any big structural issues or anything like that. So,
right.
you know, I had no problem with it. I had the money sitting there, so I wanted to make sure it happened. So
upping
the earnest money is important.
Yeah, what do you normally put down for earnest money?
$2,500, $5,000,
yeah.
if the deal's really good. Now, if a realtor is feeding me the property and nobody else has seen it,
because
it's not in the MLS yet, $1,500 is fine.
Yeah.
It just depends on how many bidders, how many are fighting for the property, who it is that's feeding me the deal, and how much business I've done with them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people make a mistake by going to a seminar and listening to this no money down stuff, which you can do.
With an independent seller that's not a bank, yeah.
Yeah. But they hear, you know, don't you know, put $10 down at the offer and don't give any more than $100 for the purchase and sale agreement earnest money. It's like, that's crazy.
No,
you know,
but
the majority
not,
of people are
going
to look at you like,
it.
You know, you're trying to pull something over on them.
Well, you know what? They'll never get a bank to agree to that.
No, the banks don't. You can't do that through a realtor. Really, that's the fastest way for a realtor never to call you back.
And to say seminar graduate.
Yeah, seminar grad. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I do at the when I'm with an owner? I'll give him $1,000 down.
Yeah.
But what I'll do is I'll write the check out to them and my attorney because I tell them my attorney's going to be holding the check in escrow.
Yep.
So, therefore, it's ready to cash as soon as my attorney releases it to them. And they all agree with that.
Absolutely.
And, therefore, my money is never at risk because
Absolutely.
My attorney has it.
Well, you know, and Dave, that's important. Like, I have a lot of independent sellers, especially some older folks. You know, they're just nervous, period. You know, and I tell them, look, go take the contract. Have your attorney review it. I want them to feel comfortable before they sign it.
Yep.
If their attorney gets hold of a contract and you put $10 down, you know, they're automatically starting to scratch their head thinking, okay, this person really doesn't want to go through with this. This is not a solid offer.
Right.
So I don't ever want anybody to think that. I mean, after you've bought a couple hundred houses, I mean, you know you want it. You know, there's not anything that scares me off. So,
yeah.
Yeah, what's $1,000 at that point?
Mm-hmm.
But,
when you're just starting out, if the normal, I think, is about between $100 and $500 for an offer, and then for the earnest money, it's anywhere from 3 to 5% down. So just so people aren't confused, when you're just starting out and you don't have a lot of money, you got to pony the money up front for the check, for the deposit, for the offer. But then if you're going to do a wholesale or a flip, you can have somebody else come up with the earnest money deposit.
Well, absolutely.
You know, 3 to 5%.
I can tell you, when I bought the big house for $310 and put $110 in it,
yep.
My student didn't put up anything. I mean, he came to me and said, look, I have this killer deal. I need to write an offer up. What do we do? And I said, it's fine. I'll post the earnest money. Matter of fact, I put the contract in my company's name. And he trusted me that, you know, I would pay him what he needed. And then I gave him proof of funds. You know, I handed him a bank statement showing there was plenty to close. That's what people have to realize. They shouldn't worry about asking, you know, for that from
yeah.
your investor.
Hey, let me ask you this. If you were to, one of your realtors, if you were to go a couple of weeks before the closing and use a weasel clause and get out of the deal for some reason, what would happen to your relationship?
It'd be over.
Forever, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I tell students that all the time. You know, if you're going to buy something from a realtor, make sure you really want it.
Yeah.
And don't ever get out, because if you back out on the contract, you've just severed a $500,000 relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, if something bad happens, like the furnace gets stolen or something like that, the house gets totally vandalized in the process, and you want to get out of it because of that, that's fine. The realtors understand that. But just because you decide you don't want it now, that relationship's over for life.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there touting all these different weasel clauses to leave. But, you know, everybody... You should know within 10 days after signing an offer whether or not you're actually going to go forward and buy. No reason to pull somebody along,
mm-hmm.
you know, through the whole journey, especially the realtor, because the realtors already have the money spent.
Yep. Well,
you
the
know?
Thing of it is, Dave, even 10 days is bad. I tell students, look, don't put it under contract if you're not sure.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're into it a week, they still get mad because they look really bad to the bank that they're not in control of their buyer.
That's true.
You know, and the worst thing you ever want to have happen, my competitors pulled this crap with one of the realtors, and it turned out he lost his account with the bank. The bank said to him, you should have had control of your buyers. You should know them better. You should have got more money out of them. You know, you led us to believe they would buy. And they pulled that entire account and gave it to another realtor. He lost probably close to $100,000 a year because of that.
Wow.
Yep. So I protect my realtors at all costs. I mean, if they're good enough to feed me a good deal, I'm not going back out, and I'm going to always, always make sure the money's lined up.
Do you give your realtors any other compensation other than their commission?
I usually, if it's a really good deal, especially early on in the relationship, I'll give them a $250 gift certificate to
yeah.
either Ruth Chris or Morton Steakhouse for dinner, especially on the first few deals. And they gave me a $25,000 deal. I'm going to say thank you in a big way.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, who resells your properties, you or the realtor?
My organization does here, and then another realtor who's not part of the REO group. She's a top-producing realtor who sells 75 to 80 houses a year at REMAX. I will give her what we call an open listing, where if she sells it, she's going to receive 4.5% commission, which is a whole lot more than any other house for sale in the area. The highest commission she earns on anything else is typically 3. So when she brings me a good solid offer, we just write in the back of the contract, you know, selling realtor will receive 4.5% commission upon closing. So between my staff, the MLS, because I load them up for sale myself, mm-hmm. and the top producer that I offer a 1.5% bonus to, that's all we need to do to get them sold. The houses are drop-dead gorgeous when they're done, and that's what really sells the house. Homebuyers has the reputation of a quality home in drop-dead gorgeous condition. So some of the realtors out in the area know that now, and so they're waiting for those types of houses to get listed. And if we put in the owner as homebuyers, that usually helps facilitate the sale.
Excellent. So we've just gone over your realtor relationships and how well they work, and anybody can establish those, and they're important to establish. What's working for you for sellers, going out to sellers?
To get sellers?
Yeah.
To come in?
Yep, to get sellers to sell you their property.
Individual sellers, right now we're using our signs and the flyers. Those are the two primary.
You're still doing the flyers in the newspaper?
We do them about once every quarter.
Hmm.
You know that Greg has joined my organization. He's a new person in the group here.
Yep.
We're really trying to beef up his home buying business, so we're using them for that.
Excellent.
Yeah, we have signs on the car, too. I shouldn't forget that. And when I say signs, there's various
different... On your BMW?
Signs. Not on my Beamer. On the Denali pickup truck, absolutely.
Hey, what were you driving before you get into real estate?
A Honda.
Honda.
Well, it was a good car. It was a black car, and I had pink signs put on it and a great big pink decaled house on the hood that said, "We buy houses cash."
Yeah.
So let me tell you, IBM knew I was quitting. I drove that to work.